This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a slipping business for a long time, but the news from the world of newspapers was brutal in 2005. Circulation still headed south. Advertising revenue growth dismal as more and more ads head on to the internet. Big newspapers for sale as shareholders howl for better returns. And the big news last year, layoffs, big ones, hitting newsrooms across the country, in New York and Boston and Los Angeles and St. Louis and Seattle and more smaller towns than you can count. The news-gathering spine of the American news media, the traditional watchdog and community builder, is shrinking. Up next, On Point, crunch time for America's newspapers and what the country would do without them. Joining me now from Washington is Tom Rosenstiel. He is director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. The project is part of the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Its aim is to raise the standards of journalism in America. Tom's also a former media critic for the LA Times and author of many books, including with Bill Kovich, The Elements of Journalism, What News People Should Know and the Public Should Expect. Tom Rosenstiel, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also with us from St. Petersburg, Florida, Roy Peter Clark joins us. He's vice president of and senior scholar at the Poynter Institute, a nonprofit independent institution, teaches journalists and media leaders. He's edited and written a dozen books on journalism, including Journalism, the Democratic Craft. Roy Peter Clark, thank you for being with us.
Hello, Tom and Tom.
Great to have you both with us. Tom Rosenstiel, first to you. Give us a kind of picture tour of the waterfront of 2005. We hear sounds of great lamentation coming out of the newspaper quarter. Why this year, last year?
Well, newspapers have been a smaller part of how the public consumes its news now for half a century. Circulation began to decline in real terms. In other words, the growth in the population didn't mask the problem. Starting in 1990, and newspapers were losing about 1% of their circulation a year. But this year, we don't have the final numbers in. That's going to be much higher, more like 5 or 6%. And some newspapers, such as the San Francisco Chronicle, are seeing double-digit drops in circulation,
which is kind of like the floor falling out, double-digit drops. This is raise all the alarms. This is new,
but it depends on how you look at it. Because one of the places that they are losing, probably the primary place that people are losing circulation to, is their own websites. People are reading the newspaper online, and at many newspapers, the overall readership, if you combine the two, may be the greatest that it's ever been. The problem is that you don't make the same kind of money online. And so if your readership transfers itself, particularly the younger generations consume the newspaper online, even if they consume it in similar numbers to their elders online or as their elders mm-hmm. do the print edition, you're going to have to shrink your newsroom because the way that the online world works right now, advertising simply isn't enough of a factor there. The average newspaper probably makes about one-tenth from an online reader what it makes from a print reader.
And the impact of that already being felt. Take us through the vital signs there. I mean, first on stock prices, they're dropping all over the place by many of these publicly held newspaper news companies.
Right. Wall Street is always betting on the future, and it doesn't like what it sees. And so the stock price of most newspaper companies this year has fallen between 15 and 30%. When that happens, investors are unhappy, and newspapers begin to, panic. And so what that has led to is two things. First, cutbacks in newspapers all across the country. 15% of the staff at the Philadelphia Inquirer, 15% at the San Jose Mercury. The numbers are still tallying in, but as you say, it looks like about a 5%, 2,000 jobs lost that we know of so far this in 2005, that would be about a 5% drop.
In a single year, that's a terrible knife to pull through a newsroom.
Right. And now you have to balance that with the fact that these are not companies losing money. The average profit margin of the 20 publicly traded newspaper chains in the country in 2005 will still come in at about 20% operating profit margin.
Now, compared to many other industries, that's incredible.
That is more than the oil companies.
So why the cutbacks?
Because this is viewed as what business people call a mature industry. In other words, they think you're losing your audience. Therefore, you should not be investing and having small profit margins. You should be extracting your costs, managing your costs, and this should be a highly profitable business because it's a declining business. And what's problematic about that is that's viewing this as a print business, as a paper business. If you viewed this as an online business, you might view it as a growth business and accept much smaller profit margins. So there are sort of philosophical undercurrents. Mm. But Wall Street is ultimately very pragmatic and says, well, it may be an online business someday, but right now this is a print business. Mm. And as a print business, it should be, since it's declining, it should be very highly profitable or there's no reason for us to invest in it.
And a very tough year right behind us in 2005. Roy Peter Clark, I'm looking here, Wall Street analyst James Cramer, saying he expects the newspaper industry will begin to see double-digit declines in ad revenue and circulation in this year, 2006. He writes, in 2006, newspapers will discover what it's like to be General Motors, if not Bethlehem Steel. I mean, those are very tough words from Wall Street. What is at stake, Roy Peter Clark, for journalism, for democracy here?
Well, you know, I think there's one overriding question that should concern everybody, and that is, starting now and into the future, who is going to pay for good journalism? What economic model will sustain the gathering and dissemination of news? If you work at the, if you live in Philadelphia or San Jose, if you live in many other cities, I would argue that you are now being underserved by the news organization that probably has a monopoly in your community.
These are cities and towns where newsroom cutbacks have cut the sort of feet on the street, the reporting power of local newspapers.
That and the size of the news hole. Those tend to be the two places where, so you get less space for news, and that's influenced in part by the cost of newsprint, and fewer ears against the telephone or shoe leather on the street. It's sad to say, but you can go into some communities now, and to use a phrase that I'm borrowing from a great editor named Gene Roberts,
yes,
you can throw the newspaper up in the air and read it before it hits the ground. That's how thin it is. And what, I mean, it's part of the problem is there's this sort of there's this vicious cycle, a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, where to sustain ourselves economically, we will cut resources. By cutting resources, we hurt the product. By hurting the product, I don't see why that should attract new readers and improve the circulation.
Roy, let me ask you. You and Tom and I have all come out of newspaper backgrounds. We've got a tradition of reading these things. But if I put myself between the ears of a much younger listener right now who maybe doesn't read a newspaper, maybe never seriously has read one, but gets a lot of information online, why does it matter?
Well, I think it's the last part of your your comment that is most significant, gets most of their information online. Mm. What kind of information is it? What's the quality of it? What's it related to in terms of the larger concerns of sort of community and public life? One of the words that I've grown up hearing about in church all the time is the word sort of stewardship. which curiously enough, I always reach for my wallet right away when I hear that.
Hang on.
From the pulpit.
Here we go.
But, you know, I think it's time to start using that word in talking about the ownership and leadership of news organizations. That when we, last night I was doing a radio interview about journalism ethics, and it had to do with a columnist another columnist who had committed plagiarism. And in a year of news scandals, discussion about ethics almost always focuses on these renegade individuals who hurt the credibility of news organizations.
Right.
Isn't it time that we started not just accepting as a sort of a justification for cutting news resources adherence to the standards of Wall Street or the fiduciary responsibility to stockholders? What about the stewardship of a news organization as a kind of a public trust?
I want to turn to Portland, Oregon for a moment. We're joined there by Peter Batya. He's executive editor of the Oregonian newspaper. He's been there for 12 years, served as executive editor for the last seven. He's in the midst of a year-long project sponsored by the American Press Institute to find future models for the newspaper industry. Peter, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've got a pretty successful local paper there, regional even, but you look around the country and you see all the smoke rising from so many fires and all the woe. What's the future here, Peter?
Well, actually, and let me first say it's a pleasure to be with you, and particularly to be on with Tom and Roy, who are two of the best minds and most articulate journalists I know.
Absolutely.
I actually am not ready to panic. I'm not ready to throw in the towel. We are clearly in a time of tremendous change, but I've been doing this for 30 years, and it seems like we're always turning to each other and say, wow, these are interesting times. Wow, we've got to reinvent ourselves again. Boy, this is difficult. Clearly, this is a time of more difficulty and more complexity than perhaps any that I've encountered, at least in the 30 years I've been doing this.
When you see the buyouts around the country and the layoffs in the last year, do you see those staffs coming back, or do you see permanently smaller newsrooms? More shallow reporting staff.
Well, I certainly don't see it coming back, because so much of the staffing that exists or has existed was based on the go-go times of the late 90s, and I don't think we're going to see those again in our industry or perhaps even our economy for a long, long time.
So can you cut back and still move ahead with a news product, as it were, that people are going to reach for and pay for?
Well, I don't think we have any choice in the matter. Because of the changing nature of readership that you've been talking about, because of the growth of online, I think it's our responsibility as journalists to yet again figure out how we can be relevant to our audiences, how we can reach audiences that we're not reaching right now because of the migration to the Internet, how we maximize the utility of the Internet as a journalistic vehicle, and ultimately how we grow readership over time. As Tom observed, a lot of us are seeing our online readership growing dramatically, even as our print readership slips somewhat. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, that basic social responsibility that you've been talking about, the watchdog function in particular, which is so vital to what we provide to people, there is nothing that galvanizes a community to action or that generates reaction than a good, hard-hitting watchdog story. We see that regularly here in Portland, and every other newspaper around the country sees that when the opportunity is there. The other thing that I think is really important to put into this in context is that, you know, most of the 1,500 or so newspapers in this country are smaller newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the big city metros like here in Portland or in New York or L.A. or Boston or whatever the case might be. And a lot of those smaller newspapers are doing pretty well right now. Community-based journalism still has a lot of strength in this country, both from a readership point of view and from a economic point of view.
You say they're doing well. I mean, I'm looking here at Green Bay, News Chronicle gone, Birmingham, Post-Herald, Scripps gone, ceasing publication just in this last year. Tom Rosenstiel, let me put that to you. Aren't these cutbacks that we're seeing in the big papers, aren't they reflected in the smaller ones as well? Tom Rosenstiel, what do you see in those smaller community papers?
Well, I think that, what we are seeing, a variety of things depending on the market. Growing markets have some very healthy smaller papers, but it's also true that some of the chains, the publicly owned corporations have financed their profit margins on the backs of their smaller papers, have gutted them, and have really reduced those products. We also have a lot of those smaller papers are afternoon papers, and afternoon papers have been hit particularly hard.
Let me just point out one other thing.
There is another kind of local newspaper that is growing circulation, that is growing in profitability and in a lot of ways, and that is the alternative weekly papers is a very robust area that as these smaller local papers weaken in a marketplace, something else grows up to serve the needs of a public that is dissatisfied.
But does it have the heft, the weight, the tradition to serve that watchdog role, to hold politicians to account? Can it have the swing weight in the community to do that, Tom?
It often will have the watchdog capability, but it doesn't have the sort of sentry capability of having listening posts in many different places.
Tom Rosenstiel, our time grows short here, and we hear the desire for this to go on, and yet the numbers last year looked just plain lousy. How does this work? Can the news unbuckle from the newspaper and stay healthy? Do you see newspapers going down or at least falling down a substantial cliff here?
I think it's an open question whether information will be delivered on paper in 10 or 15 years. I think what newspaper companies have to do is to dig down deep, think hard, and recognize that the soul of their operation is actually the newsroom. And what they're in the business of doing is what Roy and Peter have described about monitoring a community on behalf of citizens and persuade Wall Street and others, private bankers and others, that this is what their business is, and they will continue to do that. Buggy makers may not have been well equipped to make the transition to the automobile age, but unfortunately, here's the problem we're facing. Newspapers are in many ways the best equipped organizationally in terms of news gathering to make the transition to the online age. What is not clear is whether they have the wherewithal psychically and creatively to make that transition and persuade Wall Street that they are the ones who should do it.
Peter Clark, Wall Street doesn't ask for sermons on the soul very, very often. Knight Ridder, big, successful news chain, for sale because the return is not big enough. Is Wall Street going to respond to that kind of plea?
You know, talking about the soul of a newspaper, I just returned with a group of my Pointer colleagues from New Orleans and Biloxi, where I was sort of visiting the journalists there. And that newspaper is owned by Knight Ridder. And the devastation on everybody's talking about New Orleans, the devastation sort of ground zero on the Mississippi coast is astonishing. And what was most interesting to me was that even in the midst of that horrible disaster, the newspaper found a way to get published. And when it involved individual reporters and editors putting whatever limited number of copies of newspapers there were in their trunk and driving it around the ravaged community and giving a newspaper to anyone who was there to see it. And they were greeted by tears. They were greeted by hugs. And I think it's at times like that is that we can remember the powerful resource that a newspaper is to a community.
Let's hope it's not just remembering. Flame burning bright there, but the water's rising. Roy Peter Clark at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Thank you very much for being with us this hour. And Peter Bhatia, executive editor of The Oregonian. Peter, thank you for joining us.
You bet. My pleasure.
Tom Rosenstiel at the Project for Excellence in Journalism in Washington. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.